go.
Oh, welcome to episode 96 of Unsocial Spectators. Hey now.
Hey now. How's it going?
Pretty good. This week we talk about the film Affliction from 1997. So what did you think?
I am glad we watched this. I had never heard of this. I didn't know anything about it and just went in blind. Oh, it looked like we were frozen for a second there. Yeah, if you've never seen Affliction, it's worth going into, but a warning, man, it is not an uplifting story at all.
I found it kind of boring.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You're just kind of watching Nick Nolte just self-destruct.
Yeah.
Like when you're introduced to him at the beginning, there's, it just kind of shows he's not really the best cop in the world. He's kind of friends with even the criminals in the town and stuff. But what he's really hung up on the fact is that he's lost his daughter, his wife's moved, she's remarried, everything's moved on, and he's just swirling the drain, trying to not be his dad. But
yeah, I really didn't understand why his daughter thought they were like in a fight or something. It was really weird to me.
Well, just seeing those kinds of parents, like I've seen that kind of dad before. Like I grew up with those kinds of, like, they've been divorced and the dad is overbearing with affection. You know what I'm saying? Like he's trying to make up for his mistakes, but he's obviously like not doing it very well.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was okay. It didn't do much for me.
Oh shit. It got nominated I think Nolte was nominated for an Oscar for this. Yeah. And James Coburn best supporting, and he won. And I haven't even talked about Coburn. Coburn just kind of like chews the scenery, just existing, you know, I was relating on a point of seeing these kids that I grew up with whose dads were like this, who were like not really there, but trying to be there on their weekends. You know, they weren't Six Flags dads in a sense because they were just trying to force activity.
Yeah. I none of my friends' parents were divorced.
Wow. Okay. Well, so, I just had like a lot of people I grew up with that just had like, you know, separated homes and stuff. And it was really more like I lived near like the park where a lot, you know, I played soccer growing up, but like a lot of kids would play baseball. We'd go to the park and hang out. And you would see these dads who were just like the coach of the team, but like still like the weekend dad. So he was just trying to do everything all at once, like be a coach, be a dad, show his affection. But then he would just also curse his kid out in front of everyone. It was like an emotional roller coaster ride. So seeing this was like, I mean, now I kind of go, well, like, were these dads alcoholics in the same way James Coburn was?
Yeah, I thought Coburn was really good, but I just didn't enjoy the story. Didn't do much for me.
Oh, shit. Like, for me, it was like Nick Nolte. First, I had to have subtitles because Nick Nolte is full grub, you know, when he talks.
Sure.
And he's becoming the alcoholic that his father is. And he's just searching for any kind of connection with anyone. And so, like, he has this friend, Sissy Spacek, that he just almost abuses.
Yeah, I thought she was good.
Yeah, yeah. She's, like, really great in every scene she's in because she's having to be the peacemaker in this family, you know. And then you have that real fucked up moment where he goes to see his mom and dad, and his dad's like, oh, I'll go get your mom, and she's just frozen to death in bed upstairs, and the son discovers it, and you, And then, like, at that point, Sissy Spacek should have just fucking bugged out, like, you know. Sure. But she was, like, being this good person trying to stay with him, and he still is just fucked up. Like, he, you know, he's trying to be a cop, but he's not a good cop. Like, he couldn't even arrest a kid for smoking pot, you know.
Well,
but
he starts smoking with them.
Yeah, but it's like, he has no, it's his idea of what is right and wrong, and that's the way it should be decided. And what's scary is that's a lot of cops. They go, well, I uphold the law, so I can uphold the law in any way I see fit, you know, whether it's legal or moral.
Yeah, when I was growing up, the best weed was from this Addison cop I used to buy from.
That's awesome. Oh, fuck. I was just captivated by it. And then we're not even talking about Willem Dafoe showing up with a wild-ass haircut.
Yeah, he's great. He's great in everything he does, though.
Yeah, he does the voiceover, and it's the ending voiceover that gets me, because it just negates these people. Like, you know, he talks about, like, the kind of fathers that were drunk, abusive, and that you could see it, that's the way he Nolte was headed. And he goes, now that they're both gone, we just don't even talk about them. Like, we don't want to even carry on, because there was just so much badness in it. So it's just the way that last voiceover just hit me. And I was just like, man, it's not a fun movie at all. It's just, you're watching a man watch just fucking everything fall apart in his life, and he can't keep it together. And he starts becoming a cop again and chases down a kid he believes may have killed someone. Like, that's the B story in this, is the crime.
Yeah. Then he attacks the owner of the diner.
Yeah.
Who was the thief guy in Red Green.
Yeah, I know. I was looking up everyone. I saw Red Green. But yeah, this was one I was not aware of, and probably one I wouldn't revisit again, but I would recommend it to people if they just want to see incredible acting, because I think everyone in this film is a home run.
Sure. No, I agree with that. I just, at times, I kind of found myself almost nodding off.
Oh, wow. It's like, I mean, a lot of the times I'll put it on my second screen, and if I'm bored, then, you know, I kind of zone out. But, like, I was clinging to every moment in this movie, because Nick Nolte is putting on a show. And the director, Paul Schrader, called up Coburn and was talking to him about this role. And he goes, and Coburn replied, oh, you want me to act? Like, he goes, I rarely get a director who's calling for me to act. He just wants me to come in and, you know, play this part. But this guy wanted me to work. And he doesn't even have that much, but everything he does with it is fucking great.
So what else have you been watching?
Gran Turismo. It was in my library. We were able to score a copy of it. At first, I was not really big on it because, it's like another adaptation of a true story. But shit happens in this film that you don't expect it to go to. And the end of the film tells you a highlight of the real story, which was real exciting.
I'm confused. It's based on a real story?
It's
a video game movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
So apparently, like, the way the film tells it, because I haven't looked up the legit story, is Nissan was going to work with the Gran Turismo to have a contest to get the best drivers in there and then put them into a car camp, and the best person to come out of that camp would be a real driver for Nissan. So, okay. So you get this kid, and you kind of had this whole backstory, and Jerry Holloway plays the mom. Like, it caught me off guard. I'm like, is that Ginger Spice? You know, she just shows up. But it's really the best part of the film is David Harbour, who is the chief engineer of the drivers, who was a guy who kind of burned out, so he comes in to be the Yoda to this kid.
Well, he's Pops.
Man, he's so good in this. Like, I kind of was just like, meh, you know, I wasn't really into it. But at the end, they showed a lot of real shit that happened. And so it gave it more credibility. And so I was like, oh, okay, because I wanted to believe that most of it was just kind of made up for the screen. But I just don't want to spoil it for you or anyone that may want to watch it, because it is about this real story of this kid that was recruited and did race. And what's fascinating is he's the stunt driver in the movie, too, because when they would have the actor, you know, helmet up and stuff, he would actually be the guy behind the wheel driving all the stunt stuff. So,
oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was way better than I thought it was. I watched The Marvels.
Oh, really? Good.
Yeah, really enjoyed that. I don't get what people are so down about that movie for, you know.
Dude, they're still pissed off that she's a woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, these Marvel and Disney assholes.
Yeah.
You can't deal with women being having the Force or being a superhero. It's really, they're all, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Like if that is the hill you're going to die on, it's so weird to get so vocal about, like, hey, maybe this movie isn't for you that stars a female person who empowered.
Can you imagine all the girls out there that get to dress up like a superhero for Halloween and such?
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. And see, like, coming from the comics, when Kelly Sue DeConnick started writing Captain Marvel, like, there was this wave of fandom that just caught on to that book. And she has, like, hardcore fans called the Carol Corps that are just hardcore, like, hey, we love this character. We love the positive. We love the fights that she has, the things that she overcomes that we can relate to. And Kelly Sue's one of the great comic writers that we've had. And to do this, I mean, Carol Danvers is a character that came from the 60s. And she was even just kind of a joke back then, because they would, you know, talk about all the stuff she could do but never show it. She was always there for kind of sex appeal and stuff. And she's had real weird stories. She's changed her costume a billion times, but she hasn't really had this solid background until recently, you know? So, but I enjoyed it. I had a blast. I loved everyone in it. You know, and I understand they cut it back. They probably cut out a few storylines just to cut the runtime down, because every fucking Marvel movie had been like over 2 hours. And I appreciated that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I loved all the interplay where they all were switching with each other and all that stuff. I thought it was a really cool idea.
And then have to actually practice at it so mm-hmm. that they could see if they could just catch a ball or juggle or whatever.
So what else have you been watching?
Oh, man. I watched two Walter Hill movies. One I had seen, one I hadn't. I watched Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever seen that?
I don't think so.
Holy shit, dude. It's so good. It wasn't really loved when it came out back in the day, but it's Walter Hill, and it's, I don't want to say Western, but it's a 1930s Texas city that has been overtaken by corruption. And it's an American remake of Yojimbo, but he won't say it's a remake, but it follows those lines of Yojimbo, if you've ever seen that.
Yeah.
And so Bruce is playing both sides of these two gangs that are running in this town. There's an Italian group, and then this other group, Michael Imperioli. I think this is one of his first films is in it. It is so good. Like, it just has great action scenes, just what you expect from Walter Hill. And Bruce is great. Like, Walter talked about their, you know, when they asked, you know, like, hey, how do you want to play this? He goes, I just need you to come in and be Robert Mitchum. And that's kind of what he does through the whole film. There's like one scene where he gets to use a phone that is very out of character and it's very Bruce, but everything else is fucking solid. I loved it. So I just looked on Tubi to see what other Walter films were on. And have you ever seen Southern Comfort?
Describe it to me.
It takes place in Louisiana, the Texas-Louisiana border in 1973. Peter Coyote heads a group of military reservists out the swamps. No?
Huh. I'm going to put it on my list.
I'm going to tell you, this is my favorite film of the week. I love this movie because it is Peter Coyote, T.K. Carter, Fred Ward, Keith Carradine, Powers Booth. I mean, and this is a tight group. This is a very small group of people. And so they go out during this exercise and everything falls apart. And Walter Hill has come out and said, like, this is not a metaphor for the Vietnam War, but it's a perfect metaphor for the Vietnam War. I mean, he's got people in control that really don't know what they're doing. Guys killing other people and losing their mind. People having nervous breakdowns. People getting caught in traps and stuff because they wander into the area that is run by Cajuns. So they piss off the Cajuns. The Cajuns come after them. It's just so fucking good, man. Like, I was really, like, probably the best Fred Ward performance. I hadn't seen this before, and it was amazing.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a great flick and free on Tubi.
I'll have to check it out.
Finally got to see a Mia Goth film. I know you've been talking about Mia Goth. Yeah.
She's awesome.
Yeah, I saw X.
X is so good, dude.
It is so wild, man. Like, you just...
Ty West is amazing.
Like, at first it was like, okay, well, I'm getting this Texas Chainsaw Massacre vibe. But the killing and everything in it is so different and so out there. And so I'm going to try to watch, because I know that his next movie, Pearl, is a prequel.
My God, Pearl is amazing.
Okay, well, I have that on deck, so I'm going to be probably watching that this week. But I feel like I have to be in a certain mood to watch it, because after watching this, like, I kind of have an expectation.
Yeah, I can't wait for Maxine.
Yeah, I know. And that now we've got like I guess this will be the sequel of Where She Goes From Here, which I'm kind of fascinated to see because of the way everything ended. That movie was fucking wild.
Dude, Mia Goth is amazing.
Yeah, and you're just, I don't know, like it's weird because typically, you know, your last girl horror trope is the you know, the sweet innocent virgin that gets away. So you would have kind of thought it was the one that they called Church Mouse, you know, but she kind of turns halfway in the film and you're just like, and you see the guy who's filming it, like, he has to deal with his girlfriend has now done this, and he just has a nervous breakdown. Like, it just cracks me up because it's like, I can work in porn, but my girlfriend can't work in porn.
Right.
Kind of argument. So it was neat to have those acting scenes and that shit kind of play out. But I am so fascinated with this old couple and where they came from.
She is so good. And what is it? What do you call a woman who just constantly wants sex?
Oh, a nympho?
Yeah, Nymphomaniac 2, Volume 2. She's amazing in that.
I've never... Is that the Shia LaBeouf? Yeah. I remember when he was in, I was like, but Willem Dafoe's in this?
There's a Volume 1 and a Volume 2. They're both great.
How long is it like... Are they both like a couple hours?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
All I know is a nude Mia Goth.
Lars von Trier.
Yeah, it's just, it's at times hard to watch, but at times you can't stop watching.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I again, it's one of those where I go, man, I got to be in the mood.
Well, if you're watching any Lars von Trier movie, you gotta
I'm enjoying life too much. Let me bring it down a notch. Turn on some law. It says here, though, that Mia Goth's married to Shia LaBeouf. They've been married since 2016. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. And that Maxine. That looks good. That look. Oh, I'm hyped for it, though.
Yeah.
And one last movie. Shelby got me for Valentine's Day a legit hard copy of Thrashin', the Josh Brolin skateboard movie that I loved as a kid, and it got me skateboarding. It is not a good movie, but it is a fun watch.
Huh. If you say so.
It is for me. I loved it, and I had a blast. So I just love watching it because it's just kind of cheesy skateboarder life of the 80s.
Anything else?
That's it.
You have any news?
No. You watch anything?
Yeah. I watched Return of the Living Dead.
Fuck yeah. Love that movie.
I'd never seen it before. Pretty great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. The punks and all the other stuff were just pretty fucking great.
The slow transformation to a zombie plus, or the, and then you got that one girl that's just buck ass naked coming out of the woods. Oh fuck, that movie is wild. I love it.
Pretty great. Then I watched The Accountant.
Oh, with Ben Affleck?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty awesome, man.
It's awesome flick, man. I love that. I did not expect that. That's the best Batman movie, you could say, because Ben Affleck does a better job as Batman in that movie than any other time he played Batman.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, pretty great. Anna Kendrick is great. Love that film. Then I watched Bubba Hotep.
Oh, the great Bubba Hotep.
Yeah, just a fantastic film. Bruce Campbell's amazing. Ozzie Davis is amazing.
It's so weird to go Ozzie Davis is in this Bubba Hotep movie.
Yeah, he's JFK.
If you can write a wild ass movie, some people can execute it perfectly, and that is Bubba Hotep.
So he goes, but you're black. How can you be JFK? Well, they dyed me. okay.
You've got a person who thinks they're JFK and Elvis running around.
Yeah. And in the same convalescent home.
Yeah, see, that's one movie I think is just fun as hell, and you can watch anytime.
Then I watched Obsession. This was a Brian De Palma movie I hadn't seen from 1976. Really good. Really, really good, man.
Wow, I've never seen that, but that fucking lineup, man.
Yeah.
How young is John Lithgow in this?
Really young, you know. It was 4 years before Dressed to Kill, you know. So,
wow,
it's pretty fantastic, man. I think you would like it. You know, it was before he started doing his side by side cuts and all that stuff. But it's pretty neat, dude. You would like it.
Adding it to the list.
Then I started watching a show on Peacock called Ripper Street. It's made by BBC, and it's really fantastic. The guy who is like the main lead, he was in Succession.
Matthew McFadden.
Yeah, and I had no idea who was British. You know, so.
Oh, yeah. He was in MI5. That's where I first saw him.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. But that's a fun show. Then I started watching Love and Death. I haven't watched it all. I don't know the backstory. I'm only in like one episode. It has Elizabeth Olsen
and Jesse Plemons.
And Plemons, and they're like cheating on their husband and wife. And I don't know what happens, and don't tell me.
I will not.
I want to see what goes on.
The only thing I will add to this is
it's from Wiley.
Yeah, like out in Wiley, Texas, which I'm like 30 minutes from. This is the third film based on this story.
Oh, okay.
There was one that Jessica Biel did a couple years ago, I think, that's on Hulu. And then there was one that was made like right after this and was made into a TV movie. But if you can track down the book on the story, Joe Bob Briggs, like the person who plays Joe Bob Briggs, John Bloom, wrote a whole book on this this whole story. So it's fascinating. And I think they've all pulled from the book.
Then I watched Oppenheimer.
Just hit Peacock. I haven't watched it yet.
Dude, it's good.
Really?
Robert Downey Jr. is amazing.
Yeah, I really want to see his performance because I'm hearing great things.
Yeah, really fucking good. Then I have news.
Yeah.
So they finished filming Andor season 2.
I'm ready. I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, me too. Really looks like it's going to be good.
Now, did you see that one of the guys that played one of the rebels, Ebon from season 1, got cast in Fantastic Four?
What is he?
He was one of the rebels when Cassian gets down to a group of people, and he's the guy who
Who is he in Fantastic Four?
He'll be playing Ben Grimm, the Thing.
Well, that's the guy who from The Bear.
The Bear, yeah. And to me, I'm super excited about this casting because he's the most talented actor I think has been cast in this part. So I hope they'll give him a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, Pedro Pascal's pretty good too.
Yeah. I mean, Pedro. He's going to come in and be that fucking awesome leading man he is in all his shows. The thing I really am excited to see is Pedro Reed and Ben play off each other, because one of the long stories about Reed and Ben is, as everyone is in, you know, given these superpowers, Ben never sees it as an advantage. He sees it as he's been turned into a monster, and he wants Reed to cure him. He's like, hey, man, you did this to me. Undo it. And it's Reed's greatest failure of his entire life is that he's cursed his friend like this. And they never tell it in the movies, but I kind of would love to see that exchange between these two of like, you've cursed my life, but you were my best friend I've ever had.
So they're doing a Tank Girl remake.
No.
With Samara Weaving.
I'm interested.
Yeah.
I like her a lot. She's great.
Yeah, she's great.
Have you seen her in Mayhem?
What's Mayhem?
Mayhem is a movie that takes place in an office building with I'm trying to remember who the director is. Not the band, the movie.
I don't think I've seen that.
Joe Lynch does this movie, it's on Tubi. Steven Yeun and Samantha Weaving are in it, and it's kind of like you're infected with a disease that makes you kind of like chase your impulses. And because he's got like this high powered sales job, and suddenly it's like if Office Space turned into Battle Royale. And so they kind of start going through the office, and they're kind of, it's weird, but it's just like fun violence. you know, and working in the corporate life for a long time, watching this, you go, God, I would love to just fucking take a bat to someone's head in a department or someone I coworker I didn't like.
Okay.
My last boss, I would love to take a bat to his head.
Next week we're going to watch Hollywood Vice Squad or Club. It has two different names.
I've never heard of this Carrie Fisher flick, so I'm curious to see what the fuck it is.
Yeah, we'll check it out then. So see everybody next week on the show.
All right. See ya.
Later.